Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Unfinished Business 5. Zevo left his armor back at Nulif's camp. Though thoroughly oiled to not make a sound when he moved, the Witcher's heavy armor slowed him down, and he needed to be light on his feet. Zevo left his two swords behind for the same reason. So, wearing nothing but his underclothes and a dark dwarven cloak, and with nothing but his skinning knife for protection, Zevo stole into the Gutter Rebels' training camp with one purpose in mind, to capture one of his old Hansa and bring them back to his companions for questioning. He waited behind a gnarled tree, watching the two rebel patrolmen slowly make their way down the line of lit braziers that dotted the edge of the training camp. Zevo focused on steadying his breath, trying to remember everything he observed from Guess of Lyria and Letho of Gullet when they successfully snuck into one of the most fortified buildings in Alander. The Viper School witchers were masters of stealth. Zevo only hoped he could follow their example. If not, he would find himself surrounded by hundreds of enemies, with little to defend himself with. "Refuse to give me more wine," one patrolman said to the other as they made their way past the tree Zevo hunkered behind. "Said we're rationing for when the Gutter King arrives." "Get off it," the other said. "That's just what he told me." "Why in the hell would the king come here?" the second patrolman asked. "I don't know. Maybe he needs to talk to Liren Jaeff or gather some." An opening appeared, and Zevo crouched low and sprinted across the short field and beyond the braziers, only stopping when he reached the shadow of a nearby tent. Zevo squinted ahead and saw campfires filling the distance. He didn't know how large this training camp was, and he didn't want to be around long enough to find out. With luck, he would find at least one of his old Hansa patrolling the camp, despite the late hour. Fortunately, the night was on his side. Zevo saw less than 24 rebels sitting at fires or patrolling the camp. They all, surprisingly, wore the same uniform, a brown jerkin with the Gutter Rebellion sigil etched onto the left breast. Each rebel was equipped with a spear, a short sword strapped to their belt, and a rounded buckler hanging off their shoulder. Zevo didn't think it fair to call them rebels any longer. These were trained soldiers. Taking a deep breath, Zevo trained his sight on the nearest tent on his left, and, when he was moderately certain no one was looking, crouched low and sprinted towards it. Each second he was exposed, he imagined a crossbow bolt spearing him through the back. Fortunately, this did not occur, and he hunkered low in the next tent's shadow. He did this again. Scout, sprint, panic, hunker, and again, slowly threading his way to the western end of the circular camp. The view rarely changed. Pairs of soldiers patrolled the outskirts, while the rest kept warm by their fires, sharpening their weapons or cleaning their crossbows. A few industrious soldiers sparred and drilled in the darkness, a productive way to pass the time. A few others were tinkering with half-built wooden structures that were lined up in three neat rows in the middle of the camp, what Zevo suspected were unfinished siege weapons. This, of course, alarmed the Witcher, but there was little he could do with that piece of information now. Most of these soldiers were human, but there were a sizable number of dwarves, elves, and half-elves as well. Men and women appeared to be in equal proportion. From the snippets of conversation Zevo caught, they all spoke of some great battle to take place in the future, led by the Gutter King himself. Some say he'd be leading the initial cavalry charge on a great white horse, like the tip of a sharpened spear. Others said he'd be on the front row of the shield wall, while a few claimed he'd challenge the other side's commander to single combat and win. No one suggested the Gutter King would be anywhere other than the front lines. Just when Zevo thought he'd never hear the end of Arthur's future exploits, he found what he was looking for. Crouched low behind his sixth tent, he saw a lone figure sitting at the campfire ahead. She looked small, and was stirring something in a small cauldron hanging over the fire. Zevo's cat-like pupil allowed him to see who this was with perfect clarity. Delbra of Maked. The Witcher cursed his luck. Delbra was a powerful psionic, a half-step below a witch, who could use her mind for telepathy and other similar abilities. She was the last person Zevo wanted to capture. Her power made her unpredictable and dangerous. But beggars, it seemed, couldn't be choosers. As it turned out, Zevo had something of a telepathic ability himself. The sign of Axie allowed him to briefly hypnotize his target, making them susceptible to his suggestions. Zevo was uncertain if this ability would work on someone who employed more powerful mind-based magic, but he thought it was worth a try. Better that than rushing out into the open to knock Delbra unconscious. Zevo held up his right hand and bent his ring and pinky finger. He summoned his power for the sign of Axie and focused on Delbra. The power rushed out of Zevo, and he was pleased to see Delbra stop stirring the pot. "Come to me," Zevo whispered, his voice laced with the remainder of his power. Delbra stood up rather stiffly and walked towards Zevo. The Witcher didn't know if Delbra was sitting alone because the soldiers were scared of her, or if he was just lucky, but he didn't question it. No one saw Delbra walk into the shadow of a nearby tent. Zevo saw the resistance on Delbra's face when she was within spitting distance. Her nose was wrinkled with effort, and her glassy eyes occasionally caught flashes of light. Still, she followed Zevo's orders until she stopped right in front of him. Delbra's jaw was set, and she looked up at Zevo with considerable effort. "It's you," she growled. The Witcher couldn't help but smile. "Nice to see you too, Delbra." Zevo hit Delbra over the head and knocked her unconscious. 6. Jeremiah woke up to the sound of a body hitting the ground. He was grateful for this, actually, as he was again dreaming of being vivisected by Ezra. The wound in his side throbbed, but what else was new? He grimaced and held the wound as he pushed himself off the ground. The firelight burned low, but he saw a few things quite clearly. The first was that Ethramel and Silva were gone, though their horses remained. The second thing he saw was the elf Nulif, hopping up from her bedroll and tossing the stick she was whittling into the dying fire. It didn't look like she slept at all, even though dawn was approaching. The third thing he saw was Zevo standing over the body of an unconscious woman, a strip of cloth clenched between her teeth. Her hands and feet were bound as well. She wore a leather jerkin with the Gutter Rebellion sigil, a bifurcated crown, carved into the left breast. "Oh, what in the fuck?" the craftsman muttered, standing up. He studied the woman's face and found it incredibly familiar. She looked strangely youthful, despite the gray hair that fell to her chin. It clicked quickly. She was a member of the Hansa, the psionic who could use telepathy if memory served. "That's Delbra," the Witcher said. Nulif hunkered down and touched Delbra's neck. Her head shifted slightly, and she looked uninjured, save for a small lump on the top of her head. "How in the hell did you manage to sneak into the camp, bag Delbra, and sneak back out?" Before Zevo could answer, Jeremiah caught the faint scent of ozone, and heard what sounded like the soft tearing of fabric to his left. A moment later, Ethramel stepped through the green portal, reeking of booze and looking like he was both tending a monstrous hangover and still drunk at the same time. The scarred elf wobbled towards the campfire, shivering and wiping sweat from his pale brow. He sat at the fire and opened a flask, tipped his head back, grimaced at its hollow ring, and tossed it to the floor in frustration. He put his head in his hands, then looked around the campfire at Jeremiah, Zevo, and Nulif, who all stared back at him. Then his gaze fell on Delbra. "I remember her," Ethramel said to seemingly no one in particular. "She's a psionic, no? Weird breed, those ones. Rare, too. Not quite sorcerers or witches or druids, but somehow scarier than all three.
Aye, Zevo said. So why is she here?
I dragged her here from the gutter camp.
You had to grab the psionic? The one who has shown she can speak to people's minds without seeing them?
She was the only one I had access to, and we're too far for her to call for help telepathically.
I find that of little comfort.
Zevo snorted.
I didn't ask for your input, Ethramel. Where were you off getting drunk at this time?
The town of Undying.
Ethramel rubbed his eyes, then pointed his index finger at the dying fire. A small stream of flame shot from it and gave the camp new light.
Great. So we once again have ourselves a hostage. What are we to do with this one?
Jeremiah picked up the sound of crunching grass behind him. Zevo jumped to his feet and drew the skinning knife in his belt. Silva gasped and stumbled back, hands up. Zevo spat and put the knife away.
Glad we could all be here for this, Jeremiah said. I'm guessing you brought Delbra back, Zevo, because you wanted to get information from her. Namely, where that bastard Arthur is.
Yes, Zevo said. Arthur and Steska. And to see if she knows where Yana was taken, Silva added. She plopped down by the renewed fire and held her hands towards it.
Only one way to find out, Newlif said.
Be careful waking her up, Zevo. The Witcher lightly slapped Delbra's cheek with the back of his hand. She stirred, eyelids fluttering and lips smacking. Then she sat stock straight in an instant, her eyes wide and lips drawn back in a snarl. Jeremiah heard a screech in his head and felt a splitting headache behind his eyes. He covered his ears and stumbled back. Zevo acted much the same, as did Newlif and Ethramel and Silva. Newlif recovered the fastest and grabbed hold of Delbra's shoulders. She shook the psionic hard enough to break her concentration. The screeching, thankfully, abated, but the headache stayed behind in the form of a dull throb.
Fucking hell, I forgot how unpleasant that was, Jeremiah said.
He dropped onto his bedroll and fumbled for his water skin. His mouth felt dry. Delbra muttered something behind her gag. Zevo said flatly, You're too far from camp to call for help, even telepathically. And if you pull a stunt like that again, I'll knock you unconscious. Nod if you understand. The psionic narrowed her eyes at Zevo, but nodded. Good. I'll undo your gag, and we can have a nice chat like we used to. Remember the great conversations we used to have on the road, Delbra? Zevo untied the gag, and the psionic coughed.
I remember, she croaked.
Used to talk to me about monster physiology and exchange rates between kingdoms. Real riveting shit. It's good to see you all, by the way.
The feeling is not mutual, Jeremiah couldn't help but say.
Delbra ignored him and looked to Newlif. Decided to side with your unrequited love over us, eh? Wasn't one betrayal enough?
You don't know what you're talking about, the elf said.
Where is Arthur?
Jeremiah asked harshly.
Who?
You know who, Jeremiah said. The Gutter King you pledged fealty to, if that sigil you're wearing is any indication. Where is he?
Delbra narrowed her eyes. I don't know what you're talking about.
You lying son of a...
Jeremiah started. Zevo hunkered down to Delbra's eyeline. He spoke with deliberation. I know you met with Arthur not long after our little fight in Edirn. Don't lie to me, Delbra. The psionic looked at the dirt, which proved a better sight than Zevo's baleful eye. You have no idea who you're crossing, she whispered.
Oh, I think we do, Ethramel piped in. Likely better than you. We've had the misfortune of meeting Arthur several times in the last few months, and I know he'll burn or bleed out as easily as anyone else. I'm just waiting for the next time our paths cross to prove it.
We saw Arthur and his pet sorcerer Steska less than a week ago, Zevo said. I wanted to know where they went, and you're going to tell us. Now.
I have no idea, Delbra said.
What does Arthur want with the Marstone?
Jeremiah asked. The Mar what? I don't know either.
I don't believe you, Zevo said.
I can't help that. Leon Jafe might know what in the hell you're talking about. He gets most of the intelligence now.
In other words, a dead end. Why are you and the rest of the Hansa and Redania with the Gutter Rebellion? Zevo asked.
He thought he saw Delbra breathe a sigh of relief. We are providing a means for the people to rise and bring about their liberation. Arthur is going to use the army we forged to create a free kingdom in the Pontar Valley, one where all of us have power and control over our own destinies.
Delbra looked to Newlif and said, "You've missed out on so much, sis. I wish you were with us every step of the way."
"What are you talking about?" Newlif said. "This doesn't sound like you at all, Delbra. We lived peacefully in Nilfgaard for decades, and I never once heard you speak about liberating others."
"I'm ashamed to admit it, but you're right," Delbra said. Her cheeks reddened. "I was selfish. Cared only about myself and our family. But Arthur showed us the truth. There can never be real peace until the people free themselves from their northern and southern monarchs. We were chosen to play a significant part in that liberation."
"Arthur made you believe all that after a single conversation?" Ethramel asked.
Delbra shot the sorcerer a venomous glance. "It's not hard to win over friends when you have conviction and morals. You've no idea how many allies Arthur has gathered. He's even convinced an influential Nilfgaardian diplomat to abandon the Empire and fight with the rest of us. I heard this diplomat brings great power with him."
Silva snorted. "I hope he—"
"What in the hell did you say?" Ethramel said, standing up.
"What Nilfgaardian diplomat? Do you know their name?"
"No," Delbra said, rolling her shoulders and rotating her bound wrists as much as she could.
"That's just the latest bit of news passed down to us."
"Was he a half-elf?" Ethramel pressed. He squatted down to Delbra's level and was close enough to see the thin, reddened veins in her eyes. The psionic looked away.
"Answer me! Does he have ears like mine?"
"I don't know," Delbra repeated. "If you're lying," Ethramel said, leaning closer, "I swear I'll—"
"I heard the soldiers in the camp talk about an upcoming battle," Zevo said, "and I saw the siege weapons you're building. Can you tell us about that?"
Delbra turned to Zevo immediately. Ethramel sighed and stood up, backed away.
"Couldn't tell you," Delbra said.
Jeremiah clenched his fists.
"You can't expect us to believe that."
"I mean it," Delbra spat. "Our job's been to train the rebels. Proltir gets them good with blades. Rissa shows them how to shoot a crossbow. I teach them how to defend against psychic attacks. And Liren Jafe, well, he does a little bit of everything. We're still waiting on orders of where to send them once they're good and ready."
"How many are training in the camp now?" Newlif asked.
Delbra shrugged.
"Nearly 300, give or take a few dozen."
"Where are they headed?"
Jeremiah said. "I already said I don't know." Now Delbra's whole face reddened.
"What more do you want from me? You've got yourself a valuable hostage now, so go ahead and use that to your advantage. But don't stand over me and pepper me with asinine questions and act like you're better than me. We are fighting for a just cause. What are you all fighting for? Survival? Your own material gain?"
"I used to think like that, and I truly pity you."
Silva stood up before anyone could rise to the bait and said, "We should discuss what to do next."
"I agree," Newlif added. "Delbra's stubborn as they come. I think we've gotten everything we can out of her."
Delbra shook her head. "I pity you most of all, Newlif. It's not too late to come back, you know. We'd welcome you with open arms. And I know Arthur would find a valuable place for you."
"Let's step away and talk," Zevo said.
They left Delbra tied up by the fire and walked 50 paces away and whispered.
"Newlif is the one who knows this Hansa best," Zevo said.
He looked at the she-elf and asked, "How likely is it that Liren Jafe, Proltir, and Rissa will come to save her?"
"They will, without a doubt," Newlif said without hesitation. "If they don't already know she's missing, they will soon. Then they'll start combing the hills until they find her."
"So we cut and run then," Jeremiah said. "We didn't get much information, but it's something. We can head to the closest town and let them know about this place. Maybe we can muster a big enough force to overrun the camp."
"No, we didn't get the information we needed," Zevo said flatly. "We didn't find out where Arthur and Stesko are yet."
Ethramel blinked and shaded his bloodshot eyes with his hand.
"And how, dear Witcher, do you intend to find that out now that we're pressed for time?"
"We used Delbra's bait to bring the others to us," Newlif said before Zevo could answer.
All eyes turned to her, and she nodded. "They'll come alone, if they think she'll be hurt otherwise."
"Maybe," Ethramel said. "And then what? We get them alone, get the information we need, and spring a trap on them? Execute every last sodding one of them?"
"No, I feel I've made myself very clear on that front," Newlif said sharply. Her glare could have shorn the sorcerer in half. "None of them are to be harmed."
"We exchange Delbra for information on where Arthur and Stesko are," Zevo said. "Then we leave as fast as we can for the town of Rind. Let them know about the army. We can outpace them. I'm sure of it."
"Such confidence," Jeremiah said. Forgive me if I'm a bit more pessimistic about the whole thing.
It's not ideal, Nulif said, but it's the best plan we have. They'd do anything to keep Delbra safe. I'm sure of that. She coughed and shook her head. I can go into the camp alone and speak with Liren Jaeth, Proltir, and Orisa. They'll listen to me. I know they will.
No, Zevo said. That's too risky. They can just capture you.
Or kill you, Ethramel mused. They won't hurt me, no matter how angry they are. Nulif craned her neck over to Delbra. And if they capture me, I'll tell them we'll execute Delbra. That'll get them to listen, at least. It's really not much we're asking for. As if she sensed the skepticism amongst the group, she added, And I know the perfect spot for the exchange. Lots of places to hide with crossbows in the hills, in case things don't go as planned. Jeremiah was too tired to grin, but he said,
Now you're speaking my language.
Nulif showed them where this location was on a map, and said she could bring the Hansa there, so they'd have plenty of time to prepare beforehand if needed. Ethramel bit on a hangnail, but nodded. Zevo still looked skeptical. Do you have a better plan? Nulif asked softly. This is what you want, Zevo. I'm just trying to help you get it.
The Witcher nodded. Then it's decided. Best to move now, before we lose the advantage.
What little advantage we have, Silva muttered.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from The Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.